Welcome, everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. I'm your host, and I have a very special guest with us today. We're just going to jump right into it. If you like what you hear, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And I am going to introduce LaShawn Sugar Ray Marston of Queensbridge Studios. How are you doing today, Sugar?
What's going on, brother, man? I'm good, man. Happy to be here on your show. You know, you are doing great things. You've had great guests, man. So I'm honored to be, you know, now part of the family.
Yeah, and we know each other. We've met each other like five months ago. Wow, I'm like totally disheveled a little bit from a previous interview. And but let's talk about your story because I think it's so important. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Queens. I've lived there for a time period, but I think you are the exact model of a someone that's growing up there, that's lived a life, that's out to change and not just talk about it. You're out there doing it. But I want to just, you know, anchor that you're an agent of change. You're a facilitator of networking and communicating and bringing people together for the greater good. But I want to go back. How did this come to be? How was this person created? Because it obviously you may have been born this way with this instilled inside of you, but it was a journey to get here. So let's talk about your story. Where'd you grow up? What was your childhood like? What's been the adventure? You take as much time as you want. It's your show.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. It's funny, you know, thank you for that intro, man. And thank you for, you know, the interview in this way. Because in an autobiography that I'm finishing up, right, I talk about my story starting before I was even born, right? Like all of us, you know. But I like to remind us of that we are not just this body, right? Like, we are our ancestors, we are our grandparents, right? We are the elements, right? So I just wanted to frame it in that way because when I take an objective look at myself, right, when I step outside of myself and look like at who this person is, who this 39-year-old man is and has become, right, like I'm like just humbled and grateful because this is the manifestation of the universe. Like, I am the manifestation of life existing and experiencing itself in human form, right? Like, all of the trials, all of the tribulations, all of the beauty, all of the joy, all of the pain, all of the highs and all of the lows, right? Like, contemplating suicide, right? Like, at 2 years old in our house in South Jamaica, Queens, our mother woke up with the house on fire, had to jump down a burning flight of stairs to get me out of the house. Right? Said she grabbed one pamper, one bottle, jumped down a burning flight of stairs. You know what I mean? To get out the house. Jesus. Right? So like, yeah. Like my parents are 33 years apart, right? My dad was 33 years older than my mother, you know. So like, conflict, right? Like, conflict, you know, struggle, you know, but determination and will, ultimately, in love. So I've been through it all, man. You know, like I said, born in South Jamaica, Queens, 2 years old, you know, house caught fire, you know, we had to leave, moved to Queensbridge, right? And it's fitting because Queensbridge is such a sacred place. And when I think of, as far as back as I could go, the dreams that I've always had as an artist, right, as a revolutionary, right, like as an activist, me seeing myself as that, to grow up in Queensbridge is perfect, right? Like, the story, like, I couldn't have wrote it better myself because Queensbridge has a long history of great artists, right? Of activists going through Queensbridge, right? Like, absolutely. Queensbridge is responsible for great change throughout the world. And so, yeah, man, my childhood was a mix of both extreme beauty, man, and extreme pain. You know, my dad was incredible. You know, my dad was my best friend. We traveled a lot, you know, many, many road trips. You know, my dad was the type, you know, he had his own business. He had a cleaning company. And he was the type where if he was working late, right, like let's say I called him at 8, 9 o'clock, ask him what time he'll be home. Let's say he say, like, you know, 12, 1. I'll be like, you know, maybe I want some cheesecake, right? And he'll come in, wake me up out of my sleep, and allow me to eat cheesecake at 12, 1, 2 in the morning sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, he was that guy, you know. And we did so much together. We were skiing, barbecues, all of that stuff. You know, one of my uncles was a boxer. You know, he was a New York State champion. You know, Kevin Mongoose Marston, still living now, still training people now. But he had a welterweight, lightweight, I think, and junior lightweight belts at the same time, you know, and I was there with him.
That's awesome.
I used to go, going to the fights. I remember one fight we went in, I think at a Hotel Pennsylvania, and I had a belt. My cousin, his son had a belt, and his stepdaughter had a belt. And it was just like incredible. You know, you got a couple thousand people in the arena, you know, family and friends, and you got all these big people. And like we, as children, are holding the belts. You know, we had go-karts. I was part of Fresh Air Fund, a sleepaway camp in Pennsylvania. So all that was beautiful, right? All that was great, right? I had everything I needed, clothes, food, video games, all the movie trips, right? All the stuff with my friends, basketball, football, the sports. But at the same time, it's in Queensbridge. So going to school every day, I saw crack valves on the floor. You know, we rode our bikes, you know, a lot of times by Queens Plaza, a lot of prostitution, right? A lot of violence. You know, every couple of days you might hear gunshots. You hear gunshots, and then you hear the screams, and then you hear the sirens, and then you heard the next day that such and such got killed. You know, I saw a murder in front of my building. You know, I can't remember if it was either right before my dad passed in 95 or right after. But my cousin and I watched, you know, a guy shoot another guy in his head right in front of my building, you know, out the window. And the next day going to school, his brains were still splattered on the floor. You still see some of his brains, you know. So I grew up angry. You know, I grew up with a beautiful childhood, but angry. I got in a lot of trouble in school. I fought a lot, you know. So it was, like I said, it was a like a perfect blend of like, you know, greatness, beauty, love. You know, fun. You know, I dreamed big. You know, I wanted to play football. And, you know, I remember in 91 when Michael Jackson dropped Heal the World, I said, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. At like 8, 9, I realized I couldn't sing or dance, but I knew I had a love of words. I knew I had a gift for words, for language. You know, my mom said I wrote my first poem at like 4 or 5 years old. I was writing poetry, you know. So it was all of that, man, combination. You know, combination of greatness and pain. You know, I contemplated suicide. My dad passed when I was 11, and I remember laying in my bed at night, you know, praying for the strength, for the courage to jump off the roof and be where he was, because he was my best friend, and my mother and I didn't have the best relationship. You know, so, like, I didn't want to live without my dad. You know, my older sister died at 14. Just so much, bro, so much, man.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry. Sending you a virtual hug, man.
I appreciate you. You know, I've learned that, again, it's part of the story. It's part of the journey, right? Like, outside of myself, again, at 7, before the deaths, before the murder, I saw Michael Jackson sing Heal the World. I said, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life, right? Like, not just, like, in theory, in a small level. Like, I want to be great. I want to be in front of that many people and use my story, use my talent to shift the world. So in order to do that, you got to go through some pain, right? Like you got to be able to relate to the people. You got to be at the bottom in order to really, like, know what it is and make it better. And so my life's mission is to heal the world. You know, I got World Healer tattooed on my right hand. Like, that's who I am, you know.
And we talk about this a lot, you and I, and so the audience knows, like, we've become, like, really good friends. We share a lot of purpose and, like, principles. And so I feel for you right now. Like, I didn't even know this about you. And we talk a lot, but the weird part is I can relate to the beauty in youth, but also the anger. You know, mm-hmm. We didn't even grow up. I grew up on a farm. So we grew up in totally opposite sides of the world, okay?
Yep.
Totally different scenarios, totally different barriers in life, totally different legacies that we've come from, right? Because you talked about your ancestry, and one of the things I just want to anchor for everyone real quick, when you're raising your children, you have no idea. Everything you fucking do right now is going to have an impact on your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. Yep. And we don't live with that in our conscious mind, actually. And so, you know, every time we try to get ourselves out of that situation or do it, life gives us more hardship, weirdly, I always find. But it's also so we can lead and we can be the ones that change our legacies. You know, I think that there's a lot of that in, but anyway, go ahead. So, like, you're realizing you have this talent, you have Heal the World on your hand.
World Healer.
Yep. And we talk about this, World Healer, and I have positively, yep. I have a bee on my hand, a honeybee, meaning a pollinator, but it's about positively pollinating the world. for regeneration is my thing, and you need bees to do that. So yes, there's a tie there. So you and I have this weird thing in common before we ever even met each other.
Yep.
We're on this weird parallel. So yep. I like it, and I just want to anchor that for the audience, because there are a lot of us out there, and we're hearing the beginning of Sugar Ray's story. He's 11 years old. He's wanting to have the courage to jump off a building. You know, not many people have those feelings and admit it out loud, or are willing to go out there like Sugar Ray's doing right now and tell this story. So anyway, go ahead. You're 11 years old, and you're going through this massive struggle with the loss of your father.
Yeah, man. And right, it was right after I graduated elementary school. I graduated fifth grade, June 95. My dad was there. You know, I didn't even know he was sick. You know, we went out to eat afterwards. He took me and my best friend out to eat. Then he dropped us home. He had to go to work. The next day, I was going to Fresh Air Fun, you know, sleepaway camp in Pennsylvania. And it's crazy because I was going there every year since I was six, every summer. At six, I went for 2 weeks, right? Because when you first go, you stay for 2 weeks. And then after that, you stay as long as you want up until the whole summer. So at six, I stayed for 2 weeks, you know, brought me home, you know, evaluate me how I like it, you know, how I feel with the family, evaluate the family, how they like me. They loved it. We loved each other. I'm going back next summer. I went every year for 2.5 months, right? For 2 months from the end of June to the beginning of September, right? Every summer. And I never got homesick. You know, sometimes my dad would come down, my mom would come down, my siblings would come down, you know, spend 2-3 days with me. But I was never homesick. But this time at age 11, after graduating elementary school, not knowing my dad was sick, I was homesick. I was throwing up. I was like, oh, man, I don't know what's the matter. Like, as soon as I got there, like within the first 2 weeks, I was like, what's going on, right? I'm calling my mom. I'm calling my aunt. Yo, tell daddy to come pick me up. They're like, oh, you know, he's busy working. Oh, he's out of town. And at 11, I'm not fully conscious, but I'm like, okay, but, you know, my dad's never too busy for me, right? Like, never, ever has my dad ever been too busy for anything that I've ever asked.
I know. It's what makes you a higher learner, just that statement alone, why you're different than many, many humans. You rely on the patterns and the consistency, and when the consistency and the patterns don't make sense, you're like, what's going on here? Most humans can't do that.
Right? Something's off, man.
Yep, something's off.
They ended up bringing me back, you know, a few weeks early, you know, they brought me back probably like August 12th, 13th, something like that. And I think the next day or something, you know, my mom sat me down and told me that my dad passed. And it's crazy because how she said it, right? She was at the neighbor's house. You know, we was in Queensbridge. She was at the neighbor's house. I was home. The neighbor came over and was like, you know, your mom, you know, come next door. Your mother want to talk to you about something. So I think I'm in trouble, right? Because I was getting in trouble for everything at that time. So I'm like, okay. So I walk over there, timid, you know, very hesitant. And she's like, your mother's in the room. Go ahead. So I go to the room, you know, my mother's there with, you know, looking sad. So I'm like, you know, what happened? So we talking. No. First she started crying, right? Then she stopped crying. And then this is when I knew something. She said, you know, your father loved you, right? And immediately I'm like, what happened? Because I knew at 11 years old, again, language was my thing. ED meant past tense, loved. Like, what do you mean my father loved me? Like, what happened? And tears just welled up in my eyes. And then she told me, you know, your father died. And I just, it was the most painful moment of my life, bro. Like, 11 years old, I'm going into middle school, right? Like, I'm going into a whole new world, a whole new reality. People much bigger than me now, right? Like, I'm coming a young man. My body is changing, right? I need my father. It's my hero. Right, he's not just, you know, that's my dad, that was my father, that was my friend, that was my mentor, that was my king. And he was just gone like that. I had no preparation, right? No, nothing. And it was by far the most painful moment of my life. And now going to middle school, I think I got suspended in the first 2 weeks. I had a fight, beat somebody up, right? Like, and I was just fighting, and I got kicked out of school, right? Like I got kicked out of two middle schools. But it was crazy because as angry as I was, I still loved learning. So even when I got kicked out of school, my uncle had bought a chalkboard and I would be home still doing work, still studying math, still studying language, still doing science stuff, still doing history stuff, like committed to learning because number one, I mean, it's in me, but he instilled in me like learn as much as you can. Like education is the key. Right. So although I was getting kicked out, like my grades, like my test scores, you know, my homework, like it was top notch. So I still graduated on time. Right. Went to high school, got kicked out of high school. Right. My older sister died when I was 14, the year I graduated middle school, right? So another painful, detrimental loss, just 3 years after my dad. Just so much pain, bro. So much pain, man.
So much pain, but you and I are so similar. Like, I'm definitely an achiever. Like, good grades, but I don't avoid conflict. I still, to this day, don't avoid it very well. Like, but the fighting thing, I can agree with you on that. Like, yeah. There were times maybe I tried to avoid it, but it would always find me no matter what, yep. Even though how good of grades I got, how well I did in sports, like there was always this underlying anger inside of me or lack of purpose or lack of understanding, even though I had a great relationship with God and I was really good mm-hmm. with my words too. But I felt I didn't belong anywhere. And when you feel mm-hmm. like you don't belong or you don't fit in, like there's just anger. And when you lose your support system or you have parents that pass away, number one, or number two, they aren't living up to what you think they should be, like all of a sudden you're like, right. You're my mentor, you're my hero, like what is this, why aren't you doing more, you know? It can totally shatter your existence in a lot of ways, and you know, you want to get out of it and you have this drive, which is the good grades, but at the same time you're just massively angry and hurt, and you have this spiritual malady going on inside of you, you know, that's just eating, and the symptom of it is the outward anger and the fighting. At least it is for me.
100%, 100%. You know, and I went to therapy. You know, I did therapy for 3 years. They had in Queensbridge, they had Steinway Child and Family Services. They had a therapy program inside the projects, like in the building. You know, so I went there. I think every week or every other week for like 3 years. You know, it was unfortunate that I realized that the therapist, and I think we switched therapists twice, really could not, as hard as they tried, you know, she could not help me. They could not help, you know, because I would leave sometimes angrier, right? And I think it taught me, as I've grown through life now, right? Now, fast forward all of these years, as I'm doing similar work, right, like grief support, grief counseling, right, like, you know, therapeutic art stuff with folks, I'm realizing that, yes, there is a level of book knowledge that you have to have, right? You have to read, you have to study, you have to learn these terms, you have to recognize behavior, you have to recognize patterns, you have to learn these things, but you actually have to have some sort of experience with it to fully identify. And I don't think any of the therapists probably didn't lose anyone that close to them at that young age, right? Because I was boiling, right? Because like it's not just it was so bad. It was such a bad time in my life.
I want to anchor this for us, Sugar Ray. It's this is a very big thing because we pay therapists. One, there's a transaction of money, so for a lot of mm-hmm. people that's hard. Like, why I'm paying you to like work on me, and like how? But shouldn't you want to do it? Shouldn't you want to grow all humans? So I get it, and they need to be paid. I get the whole yep. thing. But here's generally the problem, and I find this too when I mentor people and coach people in, you know, mental mindset, whether they're athletes, musicians, or entrepreneurs. Like, if there isn't sort of, you haven't been through a dark place, it's very hard for me to find something in you to drive you.
Yep.
And here's the other side of it. For me, if I need help from someone or I want something, it's very hard for me almost 99% of the time before I find a therapist or someone that actually can relate to me. I have to really look because they need to identify or been through the issue that I've been through, okay?
Yep.
And that's yep. why support groups are so big, because these individuals have been through it. They're a model. They're leading by attraction, and you want what they have because they've been through really dark times. You're like, oh my gosh, that kind of sounds like my story. I've been there. Like how, yep. like this human who's an everyday human with no professional training is probably more helpful to me than the person that stuck their nose in a book for 8 years. And I'm not saying therapy is not important or therapists. I think there's a problem is there's a limitation to what they can do.
100%, because we also, you know, one of my comrades, one of my brothers, Donnelly Rodriguez, you know, he attends the grief support groups. He said, we heal in community, right? Because we need to be able to identify, because one of the biggest issues in humanity, or one of the biggest root causes that lead to a lot of the issues, is people just want to be seen. People just want to be heard. They want to be felt, Right? They want to know that they're not alone. Not just like you're there to listen to me, but that you are here with me in the struggle. Like you are also struggling with some things. I'm not here alone. You are also missing some people. You're also having some doubts. You're also frustrated with the way life has turned out in some way.
Yeah, I need to know because we're relationship-based animals. We need that in life.
Exactly. And so when we separate that, yeah, obviously therapy has helped some people, right? There's some people who swear by therapy. Absolutely get it. But the great majority of us, we've been through therapy and like we still jacked up many years later because there's no relation. We still feel, as great as our therapist may make us, has the ability to make us feel like understood, then we still need to be seen. If we're understood by one person but no one else sees us, it can still weigh on us, right? So we even got to shift how we think about mental health, therapy, and grief support, right? And emotional wellness. We got to shift how we think about that as it relates to one another and really truly saying together we heal as a model, right? Not just as a model, but as a model, right?
Why the serenity prayer is so important, I feel like God, God, give me the, I can't remember it right now off the top of my head. God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the strength to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah. And, but it's when, and a lot of those support groups, they say things like that in unity because it helps align them. Like, I can't, I have only control over me. I don't have control over everyone else. And I need to have the wisdom to understand what that is because, you know, a lot of anger for me is when I'm dealing with things that are out of my control, you know? And I'm taking it out on the world for sure. And whether it's like an authoritative figure, whether it's my environment, whether it's my circumstances, whether it's other humans, whether it's going backwards in life, all of those things happen weirdly because they grow us. And for me, when I was young, and I think we can relate to this because we're talking about you getting through high school, even though you're doing well, even though with all of it, you were hoping life with good grades and good things would give you something, like you'd actually be seen, you'd be seen for your achievement, for your intelligence, for your abilities, for your artistry. But the reality is what we're really seen for is our hardships. It's the craziest thing to me. Like, you could have the biggest trophy in the world, but when you want to have bonds with humans, when you want to relate to them, is that vulnerability and that going into your traumas and dealing with it. So I just want to anchor that as you continue to tell your story, because you have a lot more to go from, like, you're in high school, you're doing well. So talk to me about the high school years and graduating from high school.
I mean, so high school was crazy, you know, a lot of fights still. My older sister passed 98. So right before I start high school in September, right, 98, my older sister dies in April 98, right before I graduate middle school. Right. So now, again, the anger again. So that summer, you know, I'm getting in more trouble. I'm drinking alcohol. I'm smoking weed. I'm selling drugs. Right. Like, young 14-year-old kid. Right. Like, rebelling against everything. I remember in high school, I made the football team. I made the football team as a receiver. Two friends. One was a quarterback. One was a receiver. Because we weren't getting what we wanted. Right. High school football at that time was run dominant. Right. And like, we're getting beat up. We're like, yo, throw the ball. Like, we'll do better. Throw the ball. And the coach wouldn't throw the ball. And so, you know, we end up quitting. All three of us quit. And then life kept going downhill. 99, my sophomore year of high school, I got kicked out. Right. Had a big fight. You know, a lot of us were fighting. And I came back to school the next day. I had a knife. I had a bunch of weed. And, you know, they searched me and they found it. And, you know, this is the only high school I have been in, but because of my track record, because getting kicked out of two middle schools, because of getting kicked out of elementary school every year since the third grade, right? Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. They're like, yo, listen, you can't go to no more schools in New York City. You can go to a boarding school upstate, or you can go get your GED, right? Obviously, my mother is pissed. My mother is irate, cursing me out, hitting me, all type of stuff, right? Oh. But I was already in the streets, so I'm already doing my thing, and I got a group of friends. So I'm like, yo, like, I'm not going upstate to no boarding school. I want to get my GED. So we talk about it, right? She make me, you know, make these promises. I'm gonna change my life. I'm gonna do right. Da da da. She'll let me stay. I promise. I get my GED, right? At 16 years old, you know, 99. I was 15, December. I had to wait till I turned 16 to start the GED program. So I turned 16 March 2000, start the GED program. I took the GED test June, the end of June, beginning of July, two-day test. I got one of the highest scores in the country, right? First try, passed the flying colors. Now I'm 16, summertime, finished school, right? All my friends preparing to go back to school. I'm like, yo, I'm lit, right? I got no more school. I'm mad smart, right? I got some money, right? Like, I'm doing good, right? I'm athletic. And I made the wrong decision, man. I just stayed in the streets. And I should have started college then, because from August 2000, when I got my GED, till March, till February 2002, when I actually started college, right? So almost 2 years till I started college. I started college right before I was 18. I got like 9 arrests, right? I got an assault charge. I got a drug charge. I got put on probation for a drug felony. Man, right? Like, it just kept going downhill, man. But again, like, when I look back, I promise you, like, even when we say, you know, we all make mistakes, I'm going to be accountable enough to say it was some bad things I did, but none of it was a mistake. All of it was intentional. Right? Now, we could say I wasn't in my best mind. I wasn't thinking in my highest consciousness. Absolutely. But from the level I was at of, you know, being depressed, right, being sad, being angry, all of these things, everything I did was intentional. Like, I was clear-headed, right, from a level of sadness and all of that stuff. But it wasn't like peer pressure. It wasn't like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. It was like, no, nah, I meant to do that shit. And so I'm going to say I was following my spirit. And to follow my spirit, I had to go through the darkness. I had to go through the deep darkness so that I could emerge who I was meant to be today. And I'm still, we just getting started, you know. But your high school was tough, man. Got my GED, though, started college, got in trouble at 16, on my 16th birthday. One friend killed another friend. Like, I seen it with my own eyes, you know, and they were best friends, you know. So those teen years, man, were really, really tough. Things got rougher between my mom and I, you know, to the point where, you know, like, people would ask me, you know, how's your mom? And I would like say, yo, I don't know how that B is doing. Like, F that B. Like, I was very disrespectful. You know, I was angry. I was hurt. You know, I felt like she didn't have time for me. I felt like she didn't care about what I was going through. Whenever I wanted to talk about my dad and the pain I felt, you know, she was too busy. And fast forward, now looking back, you know, I apologize to her for that. And I realized that I didn't just lose a father. She lost a partner. Right, so she was hurt. She had nobody there for her. So how could she be there for me emotionally when she had to now take on all of the financial responsibility of raising 3 children? Right. So like, it was tough, man. It was real tough. I struggled with mental health a lot. A lot of mental health challenges in my youth, man. A lot of questioning my existence. You know, should I live? You know, did they really want me here? And then, you know, that. It's just so much, man.
Let me anchor this real quick, yes, Sugar, sir. For the audience also, because I think that that's a big deal for people. We often get resentful and we get angry. I've been there, but I've also had it now towards me. Like, life gives us back to us in spades with interest, I find sometimes.
Absolutely.
But like, even in, like, I've experienced the kind of thing you're talking about, the loss and then the division. You know, I've had best friends, a girl from college, did the right thing, walked home, hit walking home by a drunk driver, dies. Like, best friend. Man. I finally let friends into my life in my early 20s, like really in my teen years, a little bit, like friends, because I had trouble with friendships. I didn't trust people. And I was very independent and I'm very high functioning, high achiever, but also always fighting all the time because I wouldn't let anyone near me. And that was a way to especially not let people near me.
Wow.
And then, but interestingly, so then I have that. Then my best friend from high school that I actually, the person that I valued the most, decides to go to Iraq, is killed over there during the war.
Oh, no.
And so, like, I recognize the alcohol and stuff you talked about, the drugs, the stuff like that to try to make yourself feel better. Because in my late 20s, by all this loss, you know, I'm starting to feel this. But and then weirdly, all these years later, I've come to realize that this is a lot of the scenario. When you're in business with someone or you're in doing something with your spouse and you need support from your spouse and you're in a low time and you're like, why isn't she helping me? and or why isn't he being there for me? I'm going through hard times. But what you don't realize is both of you are going through hard times. And if until you can put on your own mask, you can't put on anyone else's. And certainly you can't put help the other person. So how do you expect them to help you? You know, but it took me going through that same anger period that you went like angry with someone, really mad. Why didn't they do more? Mad at them for this excuse and that excuse. But the reality is they couldn't do it then. What they can't see or what I can't see, you know, sometimes you just have to deal with other people that can't see it because they're dealing with pain. You know, that whatever you've gone through means a lot to them, maybe even more to them than it does you, and you're already in a down place, you know? So there's a lot of that stuff. I'm not saying that that's the scenario, but I'm saying what's happening is your mom's going through a low point, you're going through a low point, and what you really need is each other, but you can't find each other because you're just so destroyed.
Focus on what you need. You focus on what you need as opposed to what each other needs. And that's a life lesson, right? It's like we all have needs, but if we can focus on what each other needs, then all our needs can get met. Right? Like if we can focus on and that's what I realized. So that's how I try to live my life now, right? Like fast forward now. Like I'm going through mad stuff, like personal stuff, like with my children, like so much stuff is happening. On top of just in the last 6 months losing like 20 friends, right? Like that I know and love, you know, personally, you know. But I know that number one, life is everlasting, right? Because I know that it's not just something I heard or something I read. Like I watched the leaves fall and I watched them come back. You know, like I understand the cycle of life. I watched we bought the children in a summer camp we did years ago. We bought the children the caterpillar kit, right? Caterpillar's a butterfly. And we watched the caterpillar as a caterpillar form a cocoon, right? Or the chrysalis go in and come out as a butterfly. I watched it with my own eyes. And so the death of one thing is the birth of another, or rather it's not death, it's just transformation. It's just elevation. It's just shape-shifting. And because I know that now, all of the challenges in my life are just opportunities to grow and become something more, something different. I'm growing wings as we go through this journey. But it came through a lot of pain, man. I've been divorced. You know, I've lost 9 children that I created. You know, 3 sets of twins by 3 different women at 3 different points in my life.
Jeez. You know, so let's before we keep going into that, what happens during college, though? Because I want to talk about you getting family and getting in relationships. And there's a substance there that I want to get to because I don't want to fast forward your story. And I will definitely do a part 2 with you because I know we're getting close on time. But I don't want to rob the audience of your story. And I don't want to rob the world of the impact you could make with your story. So
absolutely.
Let's talk about those college years and what happens.
Yeah, man. So I start college, you know, 2002, February, spring semester, right? 4.0 GPA, I'm doing great, you know, semester almost over. In May, I think I got arrested. We got arrested for, I think I caught an assault charge, right? And so I missed like 2 days of school, and then I just went back. Like, I think I missed 2 days of school, 3 days. I think I missed the Friday class, a Saturday class, and then a Monday class. So now I go Tuesday. Mind you, there's a month left in the semester, right? I go Tuesday, and I resign my classes so I can keep my GPA. But I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm involved in the streets right now. My mind ain't here right now. Let me resign. Cancel my classes before. I forgot what it was. It was some law. Like, I had, like 40 days left. And then you had like a week left, you could cancel your classes before, you know, your GPA goes down or something like that. And I did that, you know, and another, you know, not the best decision, but it just helped refine me. It put me through more dirt, more struggle, more challenges. I dropped out. I ended up going back, you know, a year and a half later, kept dropping out, you know, ended up going to prison 2004. You know, 20 years old, went to prison. And it's crazy. It's college, like, I was so good, man. I was so good. I was still selling drugs, still in the streets, still carrying a gun. But I was going to school every day. And there were times when on the block, on my block in Queensbridge, where I was hustling, I will also be doing my homework and studying, and I will be stopping my friends and asking them, you know, sociological questions and psychological questions, and talking to them about different chemistry things and different things related to physics and the different sciences. And, you know, and because I was committed to learning, because I loved learning, you know, and I knew that if I lived long enough, right, like if I lived long enough, if I got out of this depression without going to prison forever and without getting killed in these streets, eventually I'm going to get to the life that I dream of. Right. And I know that this knowledge is going to be important. So I knew that subconsciously that this is going to be important. And even and consciously to some degree, I knew that, you know what, like I'm going to keep doing this, because one thing that, you know, they told me growing up in the streets, it was like, if you're going to do negative, you got to do some positive to balance it out. Right. You got to do some positive. So I'm not only going to college, but I'm also volunteering at the community center with my peers, helping my peers and those younger than me. I'm tutoring them. Right. In math and writing and language and stuff like that. Like I'm tutoring them. You know, I'm taking my little brother and my nephew to the community center, you know, when people get out of school, you know, when I'm done with classes, and like we talking and I'm helping them with different, you know, different aspects of their schooling. But then I'm outside also selling drugs, you know. So it was just living, hoping, or in anticipation that it's going to get better someday. And until then, I'm just here. And if I go, I go. Like, I had a death wish. You know, I definitely did have a death wish. But what kept me going was that dream inside of me, that fire, it was still burning. It was still flickering. Like, it was low, but it was still there, man. And I never lost sight of the dream, as low as I've been. Like, I never lost sight of, you know, becoming who I became in real life.
And so let's go, like, I mean, one of the things I want to point out, and I think that's important, is that when we aren't being challenged, people that have higher functioning or wanting to achieve more in life, we express it in very negative ways, detrimental ways, almost self-sabotaging ways. And I know that's hard for people to understand, like, why would you do that? But it's really because we're bored.
Yeah, for real.
I don't know how else to tell you it, but it's, we're not being challenged. Our environment isn't challenging us. School isn't challenging us. It's not an intelligence thing or a weird thing. Just life just puts us in a situation where we work at things at a very young age because of our situations or because of our environment, and we just excel, you know.
Look, Justin, let me go back, and we got to 1 o'clock. Actually, I got more time, right? But let me go back, right? So also the other thing that happened in my teen years, which was vital, right? Which was vital. In '98. Same year my sister passes, same year I graduated middle school and started high school, where I left the South. This is a key part in who I became. The older gentleman, one of my friends' dads, Chick, Walter Chick Austin, you know, who's now deceased, incredible man, incredible human, incredible leader. They started a peer program, a teen program at the community center. It was the first, like, official registered, you know, fully funded teen program at the community center, where we had art programs, we had boxing programs, right? We had art programs, you know. We did college trips, right? We did specialized testing at Hofstra University, right? Where they would, you know, I forgot what the test was. Like, it was rooted in, like, you know, mainly sociology, psychology, you know, emotional wellness and stuff like that back then, right? And we would get paid for taking these tests, and we would get paid for being part of the program, right? So that was big, because, like, that, although I was hurting, although I was all this, that gave me a family outside of my blood family when I didn't feel that my blood family was really my family, right? It gave me a community. It gave me a sense of belonging. Even though me and some of my friends in the program, we argued and we fought, but these became my brothers. Right. These became my sisters, the elders, some of them. Right. Like, we're still great friends now. I was in Puerto Rico just a few months ago for a couple weeks with one of my mentors who I met in that program, you know. So, like, that program was essential to who I was, because at the same time, 98, maybe 99, 14, 15 years old, my friend Kyle and I wrote a 60-page movie script. Right now. We tried to film it. We tried to edit a little bit that we filmed, jacked it up. We had no help. So that was part of the problem. We didn't have any. And mind you, Queensbridge is right across the street from Silver Cup Studios. And we had no access to media entertainment. right? But we got, you know, they're shooting music videos all the time. They're shooting movies. You know, Kaufman Studios is not too far from Queensbridge. Hype Williams, the video director, he had a studio not too far from Queensbridge, right across the street, actually. You know, but for the average teenager, we didn't have no access to any of that. And so, like, my dreams fell by the wayside, I felt, you know. And that's what really pushed me. I was angry and all of that, but when I got in that program, I was still selling drugs. I was still fighting. But I was still doing a good portion of, like, dreaming and, like, trying to create. But then when we had no outlet for our creativity, when we were talking about learning, you know, filmmaking and photography and writing scripts, and they told us, you know, learn how to fill out a resume so you can get a good job, like, I was like, F that. Like, fuck that.
I hear you 100%. You're not putting me in the corporate freaking chains.
And I rebelled even more. Yep, and I rebelled even more.
Yep.
But that was crucial. That was crucial.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I want to keep talking about this, but the more I got pushed to try to be like everyone else, the more go get a job, go be that person. And I've been in relationships where the other person has done this to me too. Go, why don't you have a steady job?
Yep.
Like, are you out of your mind? Do you not see who I am? Do you not hear me? It goes back to the thing we talk about. You want to be seen, you want to be heard, you want to be felt.
Yep.
You know, but then you're like, what? I'm an entrepreneur. You knew this when you met me.
Yep.
Like, what's going on here? You know, and it can happen. It's weird how it rears its head all the time. Like, oh, go be comfortable. No. I don't want to be comfortable. That's not my purpose. Like, I'm going after the uncomfortable parts because no one else will. You know, no one else is dealing with what we're talking about here: sex trafficking, lack of opportunities, drugs and alcohol abuse, like all these things that exist in society that everyone wants to turn a blind eye to and go to their comfy job every day, you know, and yet their kids end up miserable because they're in corporate jobs. I mean, it's crazy to me. I would take the life that I live and the adventures that I have and the growth that I have over anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so talk to me about these programs. Like, you can't find an outlet. So what do you, I mean, you're rebelling basically. So how do you keep fighting for the dreams that you have to be an artist?
I mean, ultimately, like, it was dead and gone, you know, it was almost dead and gone. So I had a girlfriend, and I used to write her little poetry, right? I used to write her poetry notes, right? Through one of her friends, you know, surprising her with poetry notes and stuff like that. And that was all I did in terms of art, right? Like, this is 2003, early 2004, right? All I was doing was a little poetry to my girlfriend at the time. I was thinking, I was imagining, I was watching movies, I was talking about it, but I wasn't doing anything. I was shoulder deep in the streets, sun up to sundown, I'm in the streets, right? Actually, 2004, I did register again for classes at Kingsborough Community College, dropped out again in June. I got shot in 2003. Right? So now for 2003-2004, knee deep in the streets, right? No, I didn't go back to school in 04. I went back to school when I came out of prison in 07. Knee deep in the streets, 03 to 04. I got shot. I'm trying to kill a guy who shot me, right? Like, he's trying to kill me. Is a whole mess. My life is a mess. You know, I can't come outside without a gun. I can't come outside without a bulletproof vest. Like, but like, I'm still like, yo, like, this is really my life. Like, this is not my life. It can be, but it is. So I'm still having the thought, like, this is not okay, right? But my body, my conditioning is every day waking up in the same way, right? I end up going to prison in 2004 for another shooting, for something else. I go to prison. He gets killed a month later. At first, I was happy. Right? Like, I'm like, yeah, he deserved it. He shot me. But then just 3 days later, I was like, nah, like, that's another black man and no one deserves to die like that. And that's when I knew my life was changing. Right? And now I'm in prison, collect calls, right? You can call some people collect, but most people you're talking to, you're going to talk through writing letters. So as I'm writing letters, I'm remembering how much I love writing. And how good of a storyteller I am. I'm telling people about my days, telling people about my dreams. I'm writing poetry to girlfriends, right? Like, I'm doing all of these things, and I'm realizing that no, writing is it. So then I just start writing poetry in my notebook, writing poetry in my books in prison, big yellow pads, yellow notepads, writing poetry. I had a violent crime, right? So they had like an anger management program. So I'm in the anger management program, and you know, the way I'm processing my emotions is through my writing. And so I start sharing poetry in the group. And man, before you know it, man, like brothers in there started asking me to help them write poetry for their children, for their girlfriends, man, for their parents, right? Like, and that's when I knew, like, whoa, like this is a thing. And I happened to meet a guy who he self-published a book while in prison. Well, he was in prison and had his family outside do all of the paperwork and stuff like that. He wrote a book in prison. I was like, whoa, right? Like, it was like super inspiring. I'm like, whoa.
The light bulb went off.
Yeah.
And once you heard it, you couldn't forget about it. You can't turn it off. Once that light bulb goes off, you can't turn it off. Yeah.
Yep. So I wrote a book in prison. I wrote some of a movie. I came home from prison. I ended up through my living situation, the book, most of it ends up getting, look, I wrote it by hand on paper, right? Most of it ends up getting lost. I'm stressed, right? But when I came home, I didn't know. So I knew I wanted to do like a publishing company or production company. I didn't know how to get money. I didn't know how to get money other than selling drugs, right? And after I got a job at Starbucks, you know, and the first paycheck, you know, after 3 weeks, number one, I felt extremely disrespected, right? Because they knew I was formerly incarcerated. And I felt like they were just, you know, like, you know, talking to me, you know, in some disrespectful ways and giving me, you know, extra BS just because I was in prison. I just came out. I was home for a couple of months. I'm on parole. They know I need the job, right? I think they were just like, you know, taking advantage of me. So I quit. I quit, and I was like, you know what? I'm not dealing with the disrespect because I'm going to end up hurting somebody. I don't want to go back to prison, right? And I'm not doing all this work and taking the disrespect for this little bit of money. I can make more money than this on a block in a day than they paid me in 3 weeks. So I quit my job, you know? And for a whole year, some change, man, I was back in the streets, 07 to 08. But it's crazy because although I was in the streets, I promise you, like, I was thinking every day, like, yo, I got to make a change. Yo, I got to make a change. I got to do something different. I can't keep doing this. And two or three times, I almost got arrested for drugs, right? Like, and it would have been bad. But fate would have it, man. Literally, I bought my first video camera, Justin, from a crackhead.
Jesus.
I bought my first video camera from a crackhead. Awesome. And I turned a crack house into a film studio. And my friends will tell you, I turned the crack house that I was renting into a film studio, and I went and spent like $3,000-$4,000 on equipment at B&H, and I ordered a bunch of stuff online, costumes and masks and lights and all type of props and stuff. And I didn't know what I was gonna do. I just know I had a bunch of friends. We was funny, and yo, let's create some skits. And I started making skits. You know, I got some old skits on my old YouTube channel, right? Like when I was just transitioning, when I was still hustling a little bit, but I was like, nah, I got to do something different. And I finished parole September 2008, and probably November 2008, I got rid of my drugs, I got rid of my gun, and I made a commitment to do something different with my life. I didn't know where it would lead me, but I knew I didn't want to go to prison again, and I knew I didn't want to get killed in the streets.
It's incredible, and you have this passion for film and TV and skits and built a camera studio and a video studio and obviously audio is all a part of that. So talk to me about like now this weird thing, like something that's been instilled in you finally comes to light. You find an outlet, but it's through yourself. I just want the weirdest part about all of this is not we often try to go have someone else provide it for us, but we often realize that it's only us that can go provide it.
Absolutely.
And so talk to me about where you go from here. What do you do from here? And you got this studio, you decide you're not going to go out back out on the streets. So you can't make that type of money anymore. So what do you do?
Nothing. You know, I just literally, at first it was skits. Once the skits stopped, now I'm not selling drugs no more. I don't have a studio no more, right? Because it was a drug house, so I'm not there no more. So now I pack the equipment up and I go to my aunt's in Long Island where I was living at the time. You know, I was at my aunt's basement in Hempstead. And now I'm just with my family, man. I'm just literally a family man now. My nephew, he was overseas, DJing, playing music, and he had a couple of children. that my aunt, you know, my aunt and his children's mother had, you know. So I just started filling in his role, you know, as the uncle, helping them with their homework, picking them up from school. My dad had a cleaning company, right? Although he passed, the business still in the family. My aunt was running the business, you know, so we had a couple of cleaning contracts. So I would help her with the job, you know, doing odd jobs, man, helping people move, helping people paint, you know, helping my aunt with little fish fries, helping my aunt with selling Avon, you know, doing all of the things to, you know, make a couple of dollars, man, and just stay out, you know, stay out the streets. Again, I had a camera, so I was online, you know, on MySpace, started talking to people about what I wanted to do. Got on Twitter, Facebook, you know, 2009, started talking to people about what I wanted to do, started posting some of my ideas, some of my thoughts. And it just led me to just meeting people. You know, again, I'm very articulate. I'm pretty intelligent. So me expressing myself on these platforms, like, I grew an audience quickly. You know, I grew some support quickly. And I think one of the first most important meetings I went to, so I was talking about the violence. And how we need to make a change, do something different. And somebody on Twitter connected me to Erica Ford. Erica Ford is a big-time activist, you know, has an incredible organization, Life Camp. You know, she does stuff with Deepak Chopra, you know, Russell Simmons, man. Like, she does a lot of things, you know, in terms of addressing gun violence. She did New York City Peace Week. Like, she invited me to a meeting. You know, people started connecting me to her. Her and I started talking. She invited me to a meeting. Went to a meeting. I spoke at the meeting. I had no idea. I met Salt from Salt and Pepper. Right. So like, who was impressed with my speaking, by my message, by my mission, right? What I wanted to do. So that's how it happened. And then just started, you know, meeting different people, and I started bringing my camera, and now I'm filming artists, and I'm filming, you know, I'm going to the cancer walks, you know, a lot of my family died from cancer. So I'm going to the cancer walks. I'm documenting it. You know, I'm talking to people. I'm talking to my friends who are educators. You know, I'm interviewing people. I got my camera with me all the time, filming everything, everyone, everywhere. You know, and it just led me, you know, to everything. You know, I realized that I was able to use my camera not just for fun and funny creativity, but to document issues in society, to document issues that are impacting me directly and my people, my community, my immediate community, you know, who I live around, you know. And we just started growing, bro. We just started growing and speaking more and writing more. My first honor was in 2010. Right, just 3 years removed from prison. I got honored by this organization. I forgot the name of it, but they worked in New York State, and they had a 50 men of excellence, and I was one of the 50 men of excellence alongside the late great former mayor David Dinkins. Right, alongside Chris Broussard, you know, ESPN analysts, you know, sports analysts, you know, him and I became friends after that. And a lot of other great, great, great black men, man, who have done incredible things, are doing incredible things. My brother, Harold Reed Jr., who's an author, life coach, man, former a police officer in New Jersey, you know, his big brother of mine's met so many incredible people, you know. And again, it just kept growing, bro. It just kept growing, man. Activism, artistry, you know, but it was tough because I was trying to find a way to blend my activism and my art, right? And it came a point where I was stressed out because I was doing a lot of activism, right? But I'm struggling financially, but I don't mind too much, right? Because I'm like, I denounce money, like I need to find who I am, focus on this greater purpose. But I wasn't doing any artwork for a while, right? Even for a while, you know, some cameras had broke. I didn't have a camera. So I'm doing no artwork. I'm writing a little bit of poetry online, you know, Facebook, but not as much as I want to do. Right? I'm not creating the films. I'm not doing the skits. I'm not doing any of that anymore. And mind you, let me go back real quick. I remember 2010, I think, when YouTube, not too long after YouTube first monetized, I got a check from YouTube. Right? I got a check from YouTube in 2010. It wasn't a lot of money at all. Right? It was a very little bit of money, but it was a check from YouTube. Clearly, I had no idea where it was going, right? Like, with monetization on social media and the internet was going. And I got talked out of continuing to do, that's what it was. My family, right, because I was young, had all his ambitions. My family talked me out of continuing to work with my camera. They was like, yo, you know, you're doing all of this stuff. It ain't making no money. You're a young man. You need to make some money. You need to find a regular job. And Man, if I could go back, I mean, again, I'm grateful. It made me who I am. The internet is still here, so now I'm getting back to it. But if I would have stuck to what I'm doing now, what I was doing then, 13 years past, right? Like, where would I be, right? But it's all divine because we, you and I might not have connected on this platform, right? Like, so many other things needed to happen, right? I needed to mature. I needed to grow. I needed to really, like, find myself. It wasn't about the money. And I knew that. So, again, I didn't mind it. But I remember, like, looking back, like, even just a few years ago, like, yo, that's crazy. Like, I was ahead of the game, right?
I do the same thing. It was about 13 years ago, even with the Facebook and the videos that are now reels on Instagram. Like, I was doing all that for my businesses, for myself, for my life, the food blogging, the stuff that's so popular now. And, like, people really deterred me from doing it. It was so crazy, but it was gaining momentum. And I agree with you. I remember when I got my first check from YouTube back then, and I didn't pursue it. It's the craziest thing to me now because crazy. Why didn't I? You know?
Yep. Why? Why didn't we? Man, when you think about this, so wild, you know, but again, you know, it reminds me that it's a time for everything. And it just wasn't the time, obviously, clearly, you know, because if we could have, we would have. But one thing that's so good about it, again, like I just said, is that time is still going and we still have the opportunity now because, yeah, there's a lot of people doing, but no one's doing what we're doing in this way. So we still have an advantage, right? Which is why, you know, as you dug back in and delved yourself into your world, right? Like, things are growing, things are flourishing, and myself included, because when something is for you and when you're for something and when the marriage is there, it's just there. Like, no matter how much time you stay apart, it's like when it's true love, right? Like, it's true love, you know, and it's the same thing in interpersonal relationships as it is with self and career, self and a purpose, right? Self and your purpose is a marriage, is a oneness that is just there. It just is. And so I'm grateful, man, to be back on this path using media as a tool to positively pollinate the world, as you say, right? To heal the world.
And you have to go through a lot of things, and I do agree with you. It just wasn't time in my message, and I hadn't been through enough yet to do what I do now. I haven't had the losses, like, even over the last 13 years, the losses, significant losses, even though I had lost a lot by that point, friends and businesses and family, even though I had success, but I hadn't gotten to a point where I was truly humbled. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's a lifelong journey. And when it truly happens, and you're left with whatever, you know, and to your point, like, even with money, I'm so detached from the money at this point. It's the weirdest thing. It's very weird to me because it's really come front and center, particularly over the last few years. And I can't, it's very hard for me to even be around individuals that put money first, okay? Because I've now experienced that the money comes when you do the right thing, way more than stressing over it or trying to hoard it or trying to do all this stuff. And no matter how big of a house you have or how many cars you have or how many houses across the country, okay, I've been there. There is, if you don't do it for the right reasons and you aren't tuned into your purpose, and you aren't surrounding yourself with positive individuals, I emphasize that. Like, your environment is a big deal because while I was this person, I didn't surround myself with those people. Like, I surrounded myself with people that took advantage. And because I wanted to be liked and I wanted to fit in, and I thought money bought everything.
Oh, that's real.
And loyalty doesn't buy anything. Money doesn't buy shit, okay? And that's the hardest thing for people to understand. And when you actually start having it again in your life, when you change your mindset, it's weird, your detachment from it.
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
It's not even rewarding, but it's there and you want it and you want nice things and you have things. But the way you go about living a nice life is way different when you're detached from it.
100%.
I don't need a lot anymore. And the most things I need is people like you, you know, in my life. Like, the weird part is like, over redoing this podcast, relaunching my life, we talked about walking away from things. I even had, like, 4 years ago, this podcast, or the Justin Food Entrepreneurs, was uber popular. I didn't even realize. I thought I was like, oh, well, like it does well. Everyone must do this well. So I kind of let it go by the wayside in COVID and let other people convince me and their naysaying and opinions of me let me get the better of me. Like, no, no, that's not a comfortable thing. How are you ever going to make money doing that? That's always a question people ask. Well, what do you mean? Is money everything? And it took me a while before I'm like, you know what? Fuck off, all of you. Fuck off. Sorry, I'm changing my groups. I'm changing my friends' groups. I'm changing my companies. I don't care what you think I should do. I'm starting all over again.
Yes, sir.
Period. And when that happens, like the amount of good and light and positivity and healing of the world that happens is kind of crazy. And in a very short period of time, I had to go through what I had to go through to realize what I realize now. But my mission, my purpose is so beyond just coming home with a paycheck.
Thanks.
You know? And the impact that we can make as humans when we actually understand this, like man created money, not God.
Yep.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Man created alcohol, not God. Okay? Mm-hmm. These are little things that I'm just going to emphasize for everyone that become our higher powers, higher than God in our lives.
Absolutely.
Higher power than whatever. A lot of men let women be their higher power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's making something more important than your purpose, than your life's destiny. Okay, I get it. We need to raise children and they need to be our legacy, but they should never be our higher power. They should never be more important than our mission in life and God and growing humans, including them in the right way.
100%.
And so this is one of the things that I love about what you're saying, why you and I are getting along so well, and why I always say it's not about personalities, it's about principles. Like,
100%.
I surrounded myself with people that I thought were like-minded, but they weren't. They were just likable because they were similar, or they wanted something from me because I had things or achieved things or was a high achiever, and they weren't. And I found a lot of, like, ego in that and comfort and maybe even confidence. But the reality is I gain way more confidence by being around people like you that challenge me daily challenge me, like, am I doing enough? Being uncomfortable. And people are like, whoa, you want friendships to be comfortable? Nope, not true. At all.
Not at all.
I need to be grown. I need to be in uncomfortable situations. I need about be around people that have different personalities than me that I may not always get along with. But if I look at their principles and where they're trying to go with their life and the impact they're trying to make, that's what matters.
Yep.
And I've grown immensely because of the podcasts. Have grown immensely because of it, and bigger than I could have ever imagined, you know, and TV show possibilities and meeting film and artists like you guys who are really in my same parallel. You know, I always felt like growing up that I never had a way to express my creative side. It wasn't, you know, we didn't even play instruments. Like, oh, we're bad at music. You're bad at music. You can't sing. You should never do that. You know, it's like, okay, what's the real voice in my head? What's the real voice in my head?
Wow.
Not the one that everyone else is putting there, you know? And we talk, you and I have talked about constructs off this podcast, and I think this is a good topic. For us, as we, you know, you have a few more minutes here, is we create these false constructs in our head. You know, whether it's, you know, boundaries for countries are made up by humans. It's not real. God didn't put them there. They change all the time. We go to war over these boundaries. I get it. We're really going over to war over our principles of our government. But are we really? Because if we're fighting for someone else's principles, are we doing it in our own country? And as a world, that we have so many individuals who have principles, you know, and want to live this way, why do we not unify in a better way? Why do we go to default? Why do we make ourselves dumber on purpose? Why do we try to fit in when there's plenty of room to belong? You know, and that happened to me. It was trying to fit in, trying to just not get noticed, not try to be too smart, not try to be too intelligent, not try to make too much money, you know, and none of that really mattered. You know, what mattered is what I have a gift. It's been given to me, both instilled in me, and then I had to grow it. And some of it was grown even though I didn't want it to grow through hardship.
Yep.
You know, through getting arrested, through doing stupid shit, even though I had successful businesses. It was the craziest thing. Even in my businesses as an entrepreneur, when I get bored, when I am not challenged anymore, I start fighting again. Even I'm fucking 43 years old. It's crazy, right? You know, I don't do it in the same physical way, but I do it in other ways now.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have kids, you've been through a lot there too in relationships, and let's talk about that a little bit as we wrap things up, but also talk about where you are now and what you are doing right now with, you know, we talked about you, we wish we would have done it 13 years ago, but we didn't have what we have now. But what is it that you're doing now? Because I want to talk about relationships a little bit briefly. And then I also want to talk about loss in those relationships because you touched upon it. But I also want to talk about what your purpose is now. What's the new Sugar Ray? Because everyone be like, oh, the new Sugar Ray happened once you started slinging whatever and shooting guns. It's not true, actually. It weirdly, it takes a long time before, even after that, before we discover our true purposes. So let's talk about that.
But again, going back, I promise you, I knew even before the guns, before the drugs, I knew my purpose. In 91, I was 7 years old. Seven is a very significant number, right? I was 7 years old when Michael Jackson dropped Heal the World. There's no coincidence. And I was, when I was born in 84, I think he won 5 Grammys, right? So, like, there's no coincidence.
I need to tell you this. I am obsessed with Michael Jackson from the minute I heard him at, like, Jackson 5 at, like, 3 years old. That dude had huge impact on me. I would dance in my living room on a wood floor with socks on, listening to his music and videos over and over again, trying to do it. And his impact was enormous.
I had the glove. My mother bought me the glove.
Yes.
Come on. Like, Michael Jackson is, outside of my dad, like me seeing my dad, like, take care of community and support my friends. And outside of seeing my grandfather, like, feed people, right, and things like that, it was Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was, like, the greatest impact on my life outside of those men, you know, and again, Heal the World. So, like, even before the drugs, before the drama, the real drama, I knew my purpose was to make this world a better place using my innate gifts, using my innate talents, my innate skills, right? Using my passions, right? And my purpose, being aligned with my purpose. And so, what was your question again? You said, how did I? Oh, no, you said, what am I doing now?
Yeah, what are you doing now?
So I brought that up to say that the real Sugar Ray always existed, right? So the real Sugar Ray, the new Sugar Ray, right? It's just I settled into who I am. I became comfortable being different, right? I'm a writer, right? I grew up in a community where people are athletes or people are into music, right? One or the other, right? Like, and I'm like, I'm not into neither. I don't sing, I don't dance, I don't do any of that stuff, right? But what I do well. I bring people together. I communicate, right? Like, I'm very intelligent, right? Like, I can recognize the needs of the people. So what I'm doing now, man, we literally building a new world, you know? I'm fully locked in on my purpose every single day, you know, full-time entrepreneur, creative entrepreneur. We have a talk show that we're building, the Sugar Ray Show, you know, production hub, media, multimedia hub, Queensbridge Studios, which is, you know, film, TV, and multimedia. We're going to do, you know, newspapers, newsletters, you know, we're going to do radio shows, podcasts, you know, we're going to create our own content, you know, commercials, cartoons. We have, you know, one episode of a cartoon up on YouTube. We're going to do cartoons. We're going to do films, feature. We're going to do comedy shows. We're going to do sporting events, producing our own stuff, right, as well as being able to, you know, be hired with, you know, legit production company, be hired by others to produce their content. I recently, back in January, I bought a Roku channel. So I have my own Roku network. You know, Roku is a, you know, streaming service, probably the most popular, in America right now. I forgot 117 million homes, 117 million accounts or something like that. Roku more than Amazon TV. More than Amazon Fire and, Apple TV. So I have that network, you know, I'm going to launch probably the end of June, early July. Just figuring out, you know, some steps with that. We're doing have a community organization, Transform America. You know, our mission is to examine America's systems, build on what works and change what doesn't. So, you know, we do a lot of things around just human services, you know, feeding people, you know, high quality plant-based vegan food, you know, free vegan food through weekly events, you know, monthly events, things like that. You know, do different partnerships, different sponsorships, able to feed people, you know, bunch of partners, able to clothe people, we're able to help people with, you know, housing issues, you know, working with housing activists and, you know, housing attorneys, housing, you know, justice organizations. So really I'm blending art, activism, and human services, you know, in my own life, in my own way, and building brands that reflect that, right? That reflect that. That address these different issues, that are outlets for people to express in these different ways, you know, I'm a therapeutic art coach. I am mental health first aid certified. I'm an ordained minister. You know, I've been honored by every level of government, Presidential Volunteer Service Award, been honored by State Senate, by, you know, U.S. Congress, City Council, multiple organizations, you know, local and global, bunch of interviews, man, bunch of magazines. And we're just pushing the message of love and hope, love, hope, faith, you know, family, community, teamwork, unity, you know, forgiveness, compassion, grace, you know, resilience. You know, we have a lifestyle brand that we're building, sustain resilience. You know, we're already resilient. We were born resilient. We just got to sustain it. Sustaining your resilience is how you accomplish everything that you were put here to accomplish, not just materially, but internally, right? Accomplishing your highest state of being, you know, in consciousness, and then allowing that to reflect in how you live, your health, you know, your physical health, your mental and emotional health, and your health with others, you know, how are your relationships. So that's what I'm doing, bro. We just, you know, we do a weekly grief support group, you know, in Queensbridge, free weekly grief support group. I recently started doing stand-up comedy, you know, so doing everything, man. They told me when I was young I could be anything I want to be, and I took that and said, why not be everything? Why not explore every part of my being?
That's why, right? We get along so well. Why not be a Renaissance man? Why not? What? Hey, you don't have to be known for one thing. Why does one thing have to define me? I love this. Keep going.
Yeah, man. So, you know, we're doing all of that, man. Just, you know, I teach meditation. You know, I do meditation, lead a meditation every week. Partner with this organization, Echoes of Incarceration. You know, they work with young people in the intersection between youth and criminal justice, using media as a tool, you know, filmmaking as a tool to, you know, address different social issues as it relates to mass incarceration, you know, prison industrial complex, you know, visiting rights and all of those things. So I do a meditation with them every week, Wednesdays in the city. Group of young filmmakers, man, really incredible group.
I'm going to come visit you and join you for one of these, because I know that you do it, but now I'm understanding how it all ties together, and I'm like, oh shit, now I've got a light bulb. I want to come experience this with you, for real.
So doing good, you know, addressing violence, you know, addressing these issues of violence, and really striving to just shift the consciousness around these issues to see how they're all connected, and how a lot of times, like even with violence, right, even me saying the word, you know, I think we have to shift the language, because what we want is more peace. What we want is more harmony. What we want is more love. What we want is more forgiveness, right? What we want is more calmness, right? We want more conflict resolution. We want people to be in a place where they love themselves enough, in their position to love themselves enough, to recognize that no other person is worth them risking their life or their freedom, right? So even saying the word, we need to stop violence, is a negative connotation. Right. People are not going to respond to it. The people who are violent are never going to respond to it. We need to stop it. Right. Because like it's the old thing I heard, you know, I'm sure you probably heard this too. What you resist persists. What you praise, you raise. So what you resist is going to continue to happen. Right. Praise that what you want. And that's what we'll raise. And so ultimately, bro, we building a new world, man. We building a new world. You know, helping people remember that God is within them, that the universe is within them, that they're not separate from the divine, they are part of the divine, and that the things that are happening to help them grow, right? Like, literally, the old cliche is true. What doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. It adds value, it adds to your story. And whether we want to like it or not, the more dramatic the story, the better. So we have an opportunity in this time, as dramatic as much drama as in this world right now, just to last week, Jordan Neely, a black man being choked and killed on a train, right? It's drama. We have an opportunity to build a new world. We have an opportunity to build a new world rooted in five principles that I believe in, that I stand on, is peace, love, truth, freedom, and justice, right? Like, I think we can build a whole new world right here, right now, today, if we really lock arms and really realize that we are aligned in heart. And we are aligned in mind. So many of us want the same thing. Sometimes we're just speaking a different language, and that's okay. But let's find a common ground, work together to alleviate these world's issues so we can liberate all of fallen humanity. No one should be homeless. No one should be hungry. No one should be in fear for their life right now. No one. But all around the world, there are people like that. So I'm just committed, man, to, as in as many ways as I can, you know, growing as an individual, knowing that my individual growth impacts the whole, connecting with as many in the whole, knowing that their growth and their purpose and their excitement and joy and radiance trickles down to me. And let's just work together, man, to you know, build a better world, man, heal the world together.
I agree. We're going to eventually do a part two, but I'm going to come visit you, and I know I'm going to be on your show too, so the audience knows we'll just talk about that. But I'm going to come visit some of this stuff you're doing and spend more time with you. You've come out to my events. You did the networking thing we did with all the food entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs that I brought together. Now I want to come see what you're doing, and I'm interested just to be a part of what you're doing, or just be a fly on the wall even, just to see you in action, because not for any other reason that I think you're making great impact in the world. I think your purpose is really starting to excel, and there's a greater good, because you want greater good for all humans. And it's very, very much instilled in you from day one. And I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And you were patient, and I was very behind because I was recording another show where I was on as a guest. So the audience knows that, you know, Sugar Ray's an incredibly patient and kind human. I know we hear stories, and you hear stories of us, and, you know, where we can be short-tempered or whatever and stuff like that. But the reality is, you know, it's because we're coming from a place where we want more.
Yeah, facts.
Where we're not wanting to settle. If you want to settle and you want to be a negative human, like, that's very offensive to us. Because we don't want to waste the life we were given, because we've seen too many lives taken away too early. And and when they were gone, they didn't do enough with their life.
Facts. Yep. That's the biggest fact right there, man. And it's crazy because I've lost so many friends who are young, right? And one of the reasons I cry so much when I lose them and when I think about them in reflection is because most of them died before they had a chance to really live their life's purpose. Yep. Like, most of them were so great. Like, some of them, I think, were better humans than I am, right? Like, better smiles, right? Like, better with children, right? Like, more forgiving and more understanding of certain things, more talented in some ways, right? They're incredible, and their life was taken in their 20s or early 30s while they were still on the fence trying to figure out what they wanted to do, what their purpose was, what they were here for. And it hurts, you know? But I know that even that is divine alignment, you know, to remind those of us who are here, right, like to live fully now, tomorrow, the next moment is not promised. Live now in this moment, align with your purpose, and go full fledged. Like, it's no looking back, it's no what if, it's live, have faith, trust that all will work out on your behalf. Right?
Yeah, I love it. Where can they find you online, Sugar Ray? Where can they find you?
You can find me on my website, man, LashawnMarston.com, LashawnMarston.com. Subscribe to my site, man. We're dropping more articles. I'm really building my site out. You can find me on Instagram, SugarRay4506. That's SugarRay4506. Twitter is the same. Facebook is Sugar Ray, SUGA space RAY. And YouTube is Queensbridge Studios, QUEENSBRIDGE. studios.com. No, not .com. That's YouTube. Queensbridge Studios on YouTube. And let's build.
This is, you do an incredible job. And your website, the videos you have on YouTube, the blogs on there, just so the audience knows, it's a good source of information. You know, there's going to be a lot of collaboration that I'm going to make sure that happens with Sugar Ray and I, because he's a very, very driven individual. And if you see what hardship and anger and purpose all do in life, and you're worried that it's not where you want to go, or it's going to hold you down or put you in prison, believe me, I've been arrested. I've been in bad situations. I've been in court, even with money, even with what people, most people would be success in a lot of cars. But the reason is I wasn't living my purpose. And everyone, I know this is a cliche term, what is my purpose and what is it, and everyone's like, what is it? Your very basic purpose for all humans is to grow other humans, period. Procreate, have children, grow other children. Okay, that doesn't mean you have to have children to grow other children. It means you can grow the world around you, God's children. So, like, this is the thing that I think so many people don't understand, and what I want to just anchor in this episode as we end here is, if you want to find purpose, start with growing other humans and get out of yourself. Start with random acts of kindness. Mm-hmm. Start by showing up for other people. and not using any excuse. You don't want to get off the couch. You're too into the TV show. That's the exact moment. You get your ass off the fucking couch and you go find someone out there that needs you. They may not even know they need you. You may not even know that they need you. But get off and get out of your TV. Get out of your life. And if you're doing TV and you're doing life, this is the other thing that's weirdly happened to me, especially over the last 9 years or 13 years, depending on how you look at it, is TV has become almost non-existent in my life. I don't get caught up in the news. I don't get caught up in the things. I go find the issues and I go solve them. I don't sit there as a bystander anymore.
Yep. Yes, sir.
And when you do that, you don't have any purpose. Your purpose cannot be in front of a TV or in a video game or whatever. I get it. I play a video game here and there, and I do watch TV here and there. I'm weirdly addicted to the Star Wars things because of all the knowledge that's packed into those things right now. I'm like blown away. I'm like, holy shit. Did anyone realize this isn't meant for kids? The dark side, the light side, the sayings, fucking Master Yoda. But that's the kind of impact I'm talking about. Why am I going to sit and be a bystander when I can go be living it right now? I can be the spear cutting the flesh for goodness. You know, that tip of the spear. And it's why you and I have been, I think that God put us through the journey, why we've entered each other's lives when we have now. And, you know, I'm impressed by you. I'm impressed by what you've done. I'm impressed by your website. I'm impressed that your YouTube channel. I'm impressed by what you're doing with Roku. And taking the step to do that and having the balls to do that, because we do only get to live once. Why not try everything possible? Why not, you know, learn everything? And I'm learning like three languages right now.
Justin, you know what's crazy, right? Like, I bought the Roku Network, and I'm building Queensbridge Studios, not so I can run it, right? Just so I just want to be a part of it. I just want to be a content creator. I just want to be a writer, a filmmaker, a cinematographer, you know, an actor and some stuff, maybe, you know, consultant, creative consultant and some stuff. I want to put women and other people at the top of those companies. I don't want to run them. It's just, I wish I had it. I wish I had those companies when I was younger. I wish those companies, those type of brands existed when I was younger. And even now, I wish there was really a lot of more media companies, more production hubs, a TV network that really, like, try to source content that was real and true from people that was doing real work. Like I've been doing this work for 15 years now. So 2008, I changed my life. I've been doing this work, right? Like, and I've gotten better as a human, and we've done so much for so many, right? Like, and it's like, you know what? Like, these stories should be told, and these people that I'm connected to, stories should be told. So you know what? I'm not going to beg nobody else. I'm not going to go to another network and be like, yo, you got to tell this person's story. I'm not going to go to another company and beg and be like, yo, this person over here is doing incredible things. You should tell a story. You should tell a story in this way. So you know what? Let me find a way to build on my own, connect with like-minded individuals who believe, who want the same thing, and let's do it ourselves. Yeah, right? So the Roku Network is not my Roku Network. It's for us, the people. Like, again, I don't, like, I pay for it. I'm paying for it now. I want to get to a point and pay for itself. I'm figuring out some, you know, the actual business structure of it. And, like, find some money, pay somebody. Yo, you run it.
I agree with you on this. There's time to be Jesus and there's time to be an apostle, right?
100%.
Like, and just because we lead something and we build it doesn't mean we need to run it. Because as creators, as impactors, as influencers, as trying to do good in the world, we often can't get stuck in things. We build them and they're for other people's purpose. Other people have a different purpose than ours, and theirs is to take things and scale it, take things and build it, take things and spread the goodness, because they have a story that maybe that's what the business needs, because it doesn't always need me in the long run. Just because I create it doesn't mean it needs me.
Facts.
And
life, man. But yo, let me run, man. I gotta run.
Yeah, and thank you for listening in, everyone. And thank you, Spotify. If you want to find us, you can find us on Spotify. One more time, will you tell us where they can find you online, and then we'll get out of here?
Yes, sir. Go to my website right now, www.LashawnMarston.com. That's LashawnMarston.com. You can subscribe to all the updates. You can find my social media on there, my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And let's build a better world together. I love you guys. Together we rise. Peace.
Thank you, guys, and we're out.